Hello, I'm Virgil Aline. This is number 0506, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0506. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Food Network winning chef Fernando Ruiz, who has been successful after turning his life around from the days when he was a convicted felon.
I always knew how to cook, watching mom, grandma, and dad. But when I started going to jail, I started working in the kitchens in the jail. And I found that I kind of had a knack for it, and I liked it. It kind of came natural. It was pretty easy. It was cool. I thought it was fun. And so I ended up getting my GED in there. And straight out of one of the little jail stints that I was doing, I went straight to culinary school and graduated in 99.
Adam Sharp, the president and CEO of the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences, on the upcoming 46th annual Daytime Emmy Awards. This is the third year that the awards are only available via streaming.
If you look at last year's Daytime Emmys, which was the second one that had been exclusively streaming, the audience increase year to year was substantial. In fact, we were the only award show in 2018 to post year-over-year audience growth in the year when the Oscars were down, the Primetime Emmys were down, the Golden Globes were down, the Grammys were down in their primetime broadcast over the course of the year.
Stuart Nullman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman, and this time, Book Banter has Daily Show host Trevor Noah telling what it was like to grow up in South Africa during the last days of apartheid in his best-selling memoir, Born a Crime. This is comedy and tragedy at its most compelling. So let's find out more about it later on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0506, was Virgil Aline, my nephew-in-law who lives in Toronto. Thank you very much, Virgil, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? 2 years ago, 39-year-old Dion Calloway was attempting a high-speed landing after skydiving at the Cloverdale Municipal Airport in Sonoma County, California, when he shattered his left heel and eventually had to have his leg amputated below the knee. Well, on April 21st, the Santa Rosa resident was back at it, skydiving, when he lost his leg again. His $15,000 prosthetic leg just flew off, Calloway said. I jumped with a prosthetic before, but a rush of air got inside this time. I tried to watch where it was falling, but I could not keep track. Early the next morning, workers at Redwood Empire Lumberyard spotted something they first thought was a soda can. Yard production manager Micah Smith said his first reaction was, "Oh, that's not a soda can. That's a leg. Where's the rest?" The story ended up happily after Smith called the sheriff's office, where Calloway picked up his leg later that day. "Skydiving is my everything," Calloway said. "I always seem to come back to it." Yeah. Let's just put him down for the Darwin File starter kit and just wait. It's just a matter of time. And you know, that story could have been titled What Goes Up, and this next story could be titled Must Come Down. Members of England's Colchester United Football Club were confused by a cheeseburger they found on the pitch at their training ground in March. "When we discovered the burger, we weren't quite sure what to think," media manager Matt Hudson said. But Tom Staniland, who was tracking the burger, knew exactly what had happened and called the club to explain. I sent a burger into space using a weather balloon, Stanilin said. It had gone about 24 miles up, and the weather balloon popped. It's traveled over 100 miles and landed. The burger was attached with a zip tie to a styrofoam box, fitted with a GoPro camera and a tracking device. Stanilin took a bite out of the burger after retrieving it, but wasn't impressed. That's not nice, he said. Honestly, did he think he might have been impressed? I mean, burgers are one thing that I never, ever have delivered. They don't taste good when they're coming from a neighborhood burger joint. Never mind when they're coming from space. Yeah. Anyway, over Easter weekend, hundreds of people visited a gum tree in a suburb of Perth, Australia, after the tree appeared to start weeping on Good Friday, which the faithful took to be a divine sign. For 3 days, the tree continued to leak water from a branch stump, provoking people to drink the holy water and bathe in it. Remarked one woman, "What made it exciting yesterday, a man decided to take off all of his clothes and have a shower." Well, the excitement died down after the Water Corporation discovered the tree's roots had wrapped around a cracked iron water pipe about a foot underground, and the leaking water had slowly filled up a hollow part of the trunk. You see, sometimes the Lord works in mysterious ways, and sometimes the population's imagination works in mysterious ways. I'll leave it up to you to figure out which one is which here. Yeah. In St. John's, Newfoundland, 20-year-old Lucas Daw appeared in court on April 11th to face charges of possessing stolen skeletal remains. According to court documents, Daw is suspected of stealing a skeleton, estimated to be more than 100 years old, from the All Saints Parish Cemetery. The skeleton was found along a walking trail on April the 6th, and police were led to Daw after an anonymous witness reported seeing him licking the bones. He was also charged with interfering with human remains after he was accused of boiling the bones and drinking the water. Did I mention earlier about the Lord working in mysterious ways? Anyway. Yeah. You know, folks, do you think any explanation on Lucas's part is going to suffice? Some people you just have to lock up and then slowly, slowly back away. Yikes. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. According to the Minnesota State Patrol, a driver was pulled over and cited earlier this week after it was discovered he was watching an episode of the show Law and Order on his phone. Earlier in the month, Governor Tim Walz signed into law a hands-free bill that was designed to combat distracted driving. Okay, my biggest concern is that he could simply buy one of those stands that keeps his phone on the dash and still be able to watch television without using his hands. You know, perhaps Minnesota's distracted driving law should be a little bit more specific. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Over 65% of the time, Chef Bobby Flay wins on his Food Network show, Beat Bobby Flay. Joining us is someone who actually did beat Bobby Flay. Chef Fernando Ruiz beat Flay on season 19 of his show. He also won on Guy's Grocery Games and Chopped. Fernando is someone who knows how to win in the kitchen and in life, even though his early life involved hardship and incarceration. Fernando joins us on the line right now from New Mexico. Hi, Fernando.
How you doing, man?
Fine. Thank you very much for being on the program with us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You've had a storied past, so I want to start in the middle. When did you find the fortitude to turn your life around, and what role did cooking play in that?
I'm going to have to say, well, I grew up getting into trouble, of course. I always knew how to cook, watching mom, grandma, and dad. But when I started going to jail, I started working in the kitchens in the jail.
And I found that I kind of had a knack for it, and I liked it. It kind of came natural. It was pretty easy. It was cool. I thought it was fun. And so I ended up getting my GED in there, and straight out of one of the little jail stints that I was doing, I went straight to culinary school and graduated in 99.
Wow. What took you to jail in the first place? Was it just going down the wrong path or living in a rough neighborhood or what?
No, I come from a good family. Mom and dad, both from Mexico. I got two older brothers, younger sister. They never grew up getting into trouble. I just ran with the wrong crowd. I liked it at a young age, 13, 14. Started selling drugs at 14. Started carrying guns at 14. Got arrested when I was 15 with a few stolen guns and a lot of drugs for a 15, 16-year-old kid. That was the first time I got in big trouble. I was about 15, 16, and I just kept getting in and out of trouble from the age of 15 to about 19, 20-ish, because I remember turning 20 and 21 in jail, and I got caught for drug trafficking and trafficking stolen guns, and basically I was a drug dealer.
So you definitely beat the odds, and I'm sure cooking was part of that. But even if you want to turn your life around, one of the things that's very difficult is people accepting the idea that you have turned your life around. Was it difficult proving to people that you're on the straight and narrow and you have a new life and this is what you want to do?
I mean, there's always going to be those people, negative people. It is what it is. I mean, that's with anybody. But I know now, in the last 10 days, it finally started to hit me what's really going on and what I have accomplished in this food world. I mean, I'm never going to go back to what I was. You know what I mean? I grew up a criminal. I grew up selling a lot of drugs, carrying guns, getting shot at, shooting at people, doing what I had to do to survive at the time. But I don't ever see myself doing that again. But growing up a criminal, you're always going to be criminal-minded no matter what. I'm not going to do criminal activity. It doesn't cross my mind, but you'll always have that mentality growing up. And the whole cooking thing, like the whole balancing and how many units are in a pound. I know there's 16 ounces in a pound. I know there's so many grams in an ounce. And that kind of came that I'm really super dyslexic. I'm bad with numbers. I'm bad with math. But using those numbers growing up, it kind of clicked right away with the whole numbers and breaking down menus and costing menus out. Like, I can do that in a flash. It just kind of clicked. And I like the whole food world industry. And it comes natural. And food saved my life. And we're working on a few things that I'm going to help out some other kids that were in the same position I was. And who knows? You know what I mean? Like, I didn't sign up for this whole Food Network thing show. They asked me years ago. My wife pushed me to do it, and I'm glad she did. But I never see myself going back to that kind of thing. And I'm always going to have those negative people or those what we would call haters. But I got more people supporting me now doing good than people on the negative side that don't like me, which I don't care. But
you said that 10 days ago, You kind of reflected on where your life has taken you. Was there something 10 days ago that was an aha moment for you where you looked back at your life and said, wow, I've really done something here?
I was driving from where we live now in Chama, New Mexico to Albuquerque, which is about a 3-hour drive by myself. And I have time to think. And I just broke down, literally broke down driving. Like, it finally hit me what's really going on and what's happening with my career now and where this whole thing is taking me, all these competitions. And yeah, I mean, we're working on some really big things that never in a million years I'd ever thought that I would be doing, especially the way I grew up. You know what I mean? Because technically I should be dead or doing life in prison.
As you mentioned, and to bring you up to date, to our audience up to date, you mentioned your wife, you're married, you have 3 children, you're the executive chef of a restaurant in New Mexico, so things are going really well for you. You got your GED when you were in prison, you then went to culinary school, but even with that experience, that you had, what was your first break after you graduated from culinary school?
I'm going to say like my first break was in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I had already given up on cooking. I was with my wife back then, now. And I was already, I had plans in mind. Like I said, you grow up a criminal, you're always going to be criminal minded. And this was about 15 years ago. I was ready to move back to Arizona, where I grew up, selling drugs. And I knew exactly what I was going to do when I got back to Arizona. And my wife, which was my girlfriend at the time, told me, I am not moving back to Arizona. She took me to Santa Fe, New Mexico, which was about 30 minutes from where we were living. Filled out applications, got a job right away as a grill cook at a fine dining steakhouse. And within a year, I was the sous chef, and I was there for 5 years, jumped to about three other really good restaurants, learning from three really good chefs. And within, I'm going to say 6 years of me being a sous chef, I thought I was ready to be an executive chef, and that's where it just kind of took off. And working under great chefs, great mentors, great cooks from all over the world, and getting the opportunity to do this whole Food Network thing, which I never signed up for, which I'm grateful for. And to win three competitions and enter three competitions on Food Network, there's not one chef in the U.S. who's done that. And they keep pointing that out to me. And yeah, I mean, I got all these things coming my way, and who in a million years would have ever thought? I never grew up saying, oh, I want to be rich. Oh, I want to own my own restaurant. I've always said, I just want to be comfortable and be able to take my family on vacation, which we've never done ever, and be able to come back and not have to worry about having bills that we need to pay the next month or the next week, just to see even if we have money for that coming back from a vacation, which we've never done, so we wouldn't know. And I can't fathom not living check by check now. And they keep assuring me that we got something really, really good that we're working on. So,
reflecting back on your troubled youth, does that play in the back of your mind now that you have three children of your own?
Yes, always, always. Oh, I can't picture my kids doing anything close to what I was doing. And we live now in a town of about 800,000 people. I work at a really high-end hunting fishing resort, 37,000 acres. So we live up in the southern Rockies, northern New Mexico, southern Colorado area. So we're here in a small town. But I can never picture my kids doing anything close to what I was doing. No way. Mm. No way.
I mentioned in the beginning that you won on Beat Bobby Flay. What was your meal that you beat Bobby Flay with?
I beat him. My background, mom and dad both from Mexico, so I'm Mexican, born in the States. My cooking style is Southwestern, New Mexican, as is Bobby Flay, same style of cooking. And I beat him with a traditional, old-school Mexican dish that represents the Mexican flag, red, white, and green, which is called the chile en nogada. And he knew exactly what it was when I mentioned to him what the challenge was going to be. And it was rough, man. I got to tell you, all of them. People ask me, which one was the hardest show? All of them are hard. There's not one I can say, this one was the hardest. They're all so much hard.
Mm. Well,
the pressure.
Congratulations on all your success. You've, as I said earlier, really turned your life around and made it a success, not only for you, your wife, but your children. And you've got a great business going, and you're a prize-winning chef. So congratulations, Fernando. I thank you very much for being on the show with us.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much. And I'd like to say hello to my wife, Michelle Romero. Thank you so much for everything you've done for me. Because it's her fault.
I'm sure she'll love to hear it expressed that way.
She created this monster. So, but I'm taking everything in. I mean, it's a blessing. Everything that's coming, who would have known? And you'll be seeing me a lot more in some books and TV and everything else. So that's the plan.
And we'll keep an eye out for the many things that you'll be doing in the future. Thanks for being on the program. That's Chef Fernando Ruiz, who's keeping very busy with all of his projects, including a restaurant that he plans to open up sometime later this year in Martha, Texas, which is in the southwest part of the state. You can find Fernando on Instagram and on Facebook, and you'll find links on our website at thestufffile.com. Just go to the page for this show, which is show number 0506, and you'll find them. You're listening to The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File Program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're listening to The Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder. Batteries not included, some assembly required.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk about the 46th Annual Daytime Emmy Awards with the president and CEO of the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences. Plus, Stuart Nolan will be along with another edition of Book Banter. We also have an Idiot of the Day coming your way a little later on, and much more Stuff File news here on The Stuff File Program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and can also be heard via Google Play and iTunes. Just click on the Google Play or iTunes button located on the website at thestufffile.com, and whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. You know, that would be greatly appreciated. Yepper. Let's get back to the stuff. A man called 911 to report a road rage incident in Deltona, Florida. Another man in a pickup truck followed him home to curse him out about his supposed erratic driving, he says, and then pulled a gun. Said he and his wife were sheriff's deputies and told him, "I got something for you and I will shoot you up," and then showed his badge, a pink sheriff's badge. When real deputies caught up with 45-year-old Sean Nichols, he indeed had a pink badge. It was emblazoned spouse and was created for breast cancer awareness. Nichols denied saying he was a deputy, but admitted only his wife was. That was a lie, too. He's not actually married to her, investigators say, just in a relationship with her. Which I'm sure is a relief to her, since dumping him is a lot easier that way. A pink badge, huh? He would have had a better shot saying he was a Mary Kay Cosmetics rep. Okay, we've long established on this show that using meth will make people do some really bizarre stuff. This is just the latest story to prove that theory. A Fort Walton Beach, Florida man who admitted smoking methamphetamines earlier in the day attacked a bedroom mattress with a bedpost and his bare hands, believing a man was hiding inside it. Okaloosa County Sheriff's Office deputies were called to the home at around 1:10 a.m. after the man's girlfriend, who he had refused to let leave the bedroom, was able to escape and called for assistance. 37-year-old Felipe Oquendo was charged with false imprisonment and possession of drug paraphernalia. His girlfriend told deputies Oquendo began acting erratically, thinking she was cheating on him with a man in a mattress. He stabbed the mattress with a bedpost, then ripped it apart with his hands. He had locked the bedroom door and would not allow his girlfriend to leave, but while he was moving the mattress around, she was able to unlock the door. Oquendo told deputies he was fighting the man in the mattress, holding him down when they arrived, but the man then slipped out and left. He admitted he had been smoking methamphetamine. You know, Michael Jackson sang about the man in the mirror, but he never discussed the man in the mattress. And Oquendo must think that his girlfriend is cheating on him with the world's thinnest guy. Okay, here's a story that'll put a smile on your face and make you happy, as opposed to some of the other weird stories we share on this program from time to time. A 5-year-old Michigan boy had a craving for McDonald's, but his grandmother was sleeping, so he called 911 and made a request. Isaiah Hall asked the dispatcher, "Can you bring me McDonald's?" Dispatcher Sarah Kuberski said she told him no, but reached out to the police. Wyoming, Michigan police officer Dan Patterson says the April 14th request made him laugh, so he stopped at McDonald's on his way to check on Isaiah's home in the western Michigan city. Patterson says he thought, "I'm driving past McDonald's on my way there. I might as well get him something." The officer says the first thing the boy said to him was, "My grandma's going to be so mad. Can you please go away?" Yeah, nice story. But something tells me that when grandma wakes up, the cops might have to come back.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
This is an important self-serving promotional bulletin. My book, Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars, is still available. And like the title says, within the pages you'll find some of my celebrity encounters with Oscar winners like Carl Malden, Cloris Leachman, and Christopher Plummer. Emmy winners like Ed Asner, Michael Moriarty, and Lindsay Wagner. Tony winners like Carol Channing and Julie Newmar. A host of TV icons, plus two guys who left their footprints on the moon. Order it now. It's available in hardcover, softcover, and for your e-reader on Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, as well as at my publisher's website at BearManorMedia.com. All links are on our website at TheStuffFile.com. So, buy the book. What are you waiting for? This has been an important self-serving promotional bulletin.
I love you. Now, back to our show.
And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a Deland, Florida man stabbed his nephew four times with a 6-inch fillet knife for taking too long in the bathroom and claimed the younger man also made him feel disrespected. 72-year-old Dan Johnson was arrested and charged with aggravated battery with a deadly weapon. According to the Volusia County investigators, the victim, 29-year-old Michael Johnson, called 911 to report that he had been stabbed and that the suspect, whom he identified as his uncle, was still in the house. Michael Johnson and Dan Johnson live at a home owned by Michael's father, Willie Johnson. Investigators said Michael Johnson lived in his vehicle in his father's driveway and that his father allowed him to use the bathroom. On Tuesday, he was about to get in the shower when his uncle came banging on the door. The nephew said his uncle started yelling at him, saying, "You need to come out of the bathroom, and you've been in there too long." Michael Johnson said he told his uncle, "I just got here," and his uncle continued to bang on the door. The younger Johnson said he wrapped himself in a towel, opened the door, and his uncle started punching him. The nephew said he then realized that his uncle had a knife in his hand, and he was not punching, but stabbing him. Michael Johnson had 3 stab wounds in the chest and abdomen and 1 in the lower back. Wow. I can just imagine what the uncle would have done if he had found out that his nephew had used the last of the toilet paper. You know, these are the kind of generational family spats that never turn out well. Just ask Marvin Gaye. Oh, wait. You can't. Yeah. Anyway. Let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Last week on the program, we had a chance to talk with David Osmond, who is going to be hosting the Daytime Emmy Creative Arts Awards ceremony that will take place on Friday, May the 3rd. But that's just one part of the overall festivities of the 46th annual Daytime Emmy Awards. There's also the big ceremony on Sunday, May the 5th. So to get an overview of the awards, we are joined by Adam Sharp, who should know a thing or two about it. He's the president and CEO of the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences, overseeing the annual presentation of the coveted Emmy Awards for daytime, sports, and news and documentary television. He joins us on the line right now from California. Hi, Adam.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. A couple of years ago, people started talking about the fact that the Emmys, the daytime Emmys, were no longer on television and were relegated to being online. And some people kind of alluded to the fact that that might be the beginning of the end. But really, it sounds like it was the beginning of the beginning, because going online and streaming seems to be the way of the future. Now, you actually came from Twitter, so you're probably one of the best people in a situation to lead this venture these days.
Well, thank you. And I think it absolutely is more of the beginning of the future rather than an end to the past. If you look at last year's Daytime Emmys, which was the second one that had been exclusively streaming, the audience increase year to year was substantial. In fact, we were the only award show in 2018 to post year-over-year audience growth. That in the year when the Oscars were down, the Primetime Emmys were down, the Golden Globes were down, the Grammys were down in their primetime broadcasts over the course of the year. This year, certainly the Oscars had a slight uptick, I think, because of a lot of the buzz around both their structural changes and the movies selected this year. And the early indications are that we will see yet another increase in that online audience for daytime. There's a lot of excitement for this year's crop of nominees. It's actually the most competitive year in Daytime Emmy Award history. We had more entries than in any previous Daytime Emmy competition. The social engagement on Twitter and Facebook, Instagram, around these nominations was greater than the last 5 years of Daytime Emmys combined. And I think this is a reflection of how consumers are changing their habits. The reality is more and more daytime fans, when we say daytime, we're not just talking soaps, we're talking talk shows, game shows, children's programming, and courtroom shows. More and more of these fans are finding that programming online, through a mobile device, through their laptops, through a set-top box like a Roku or an Apple TV. And so they're not necessarily watching these shows on linear over-the-air television. And I think that shifts the need to have the award show be on linear over-the-air television. We've gone to where the audience has gone. And yes, a few years ago, it was not our choice to no longer be on television. And I think that was a tough time for the Academy because that consumer shift had not happened yet. Right now, we see it as a lucky position to be in because it has allowed us to, as they say, skate to where the puck is going and meet the audience where they're headed.
Now, you already mentioned some of the shows that could be in certain categories for daytime Emmys. You mentioned talk shows and soaps and game shows. And, of course, not all of those necessarily air at in daytime, but they are something that can be categorized for a daytime Emmy. Conversely, with this world that is changing right now, does that also affect shows that only stream? Are some of those available for daytime Emmy awards?
Yes, and that's where when the distinction was made in the late 70s, where daytime split off from primetime to be separate competitions, back then it was easy. Everything was on broadcast television, so you look at the clock and that'll tell you whether it's a daytime show or a primetime show. About 11, 12 years ago, our academy and our sister academy on the West Coast that produces the Primetime Awards had the foresight to recognize that digital was coming on strong. Now, mind you, this was just a year or two after YouTube launched, so it was by no means a mature industry, but the leaders of the two academies looked down the road a bit. And so we found a set of rules that were then more genre-based. The idea being, if this streaming show had been on broadcast television 30 years ago, what time of day would it probably have aired? And so if it looks and feels like a soap opera, it's probably going to be daytime. If it looks and feels like a game show, it's probably going to be daytime. But if it looks and feels like a sitcom, it's going to be in the primetime competition. And there are gray areas there, of course, that we navigate with our colleagues on the West Coast. But it does mean a dramatically increasing number of shows entering the Daytime Emmys that are not traditionally broadcast in any way, shape, or form, that they are only available through platforms like Amazon Prime, Hulu, or Netflix, or even self-published on YouTube.
I mentioned earlier that you came from the world of Twitter. You were the head of news, government, and elections at Twitter, and you were advising journalists, news organizations, candidates, and government officials in more than 20 nations. So what kind of skill sets do you feel best bring you to the job you have now, that being the president and CEO of the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences?
Well, I think certainly at Twitter, I had a front row seat to those changing dynamics in terms of audience consumption. You know, and when I was there, Twitter launched its live video experience. So there's now a number of programs that are distributed via Twitter. You see video in your timeline quite frequently now. And part of that grew out of this notion that Twitter is a phenomenal second screen experience to television. But for a new generation of viewers who don't own the first screen, how do you build on that? And that was really the impetus for bringing video into the Twitter timeline, so that that audience experience could match with that viewing experience all on one device. Now, I've certainly seen the echoes of that since coming to the Academy, where the bulk of that massive audience for daytime last year was through our live Twitter screen. You will be able to watch this year's Daytime Emmy Awards again live on Twitter at the @DaytimeEmmys account or @TheEmmys account. And part of that is because then the conversation and the watching are happening in the same place. It's marking a return to that experience of all gathering on the couch together to watch these major events unfold. Just now, it's the largest couch in the world.
One of the things about social media is that it seems to dwell more on the interactive aspect of it. Is there an interactive aspect during the actual Daytime Emmy Awards when it streams?
The audience very much creates that. When you watch the show, fans are talking back and forth. They're commenting on the stars. They're talking about who won. I don't think you're going to see a lot of direct incorporation of that conversation in the show itself. But certainly last year we saw vibrant back and forth between the fans, and you'll see us participating in that again this year.
For those who haven't seen the last couple of years when it was only streaming, how different is it from a televised event? For instance, things like commercial breaks or lulls during the ceremonies. How does that differ online?
I think the biggest difference you'll see is we don't rush people off stage the same way with music when they're thanking their family members and loved ones. In the television world, when you're on a broadcast network, you have very specific times you have to hit to get to those commercial breaks. While we do have some commercial breaks in the show, we have a little bit more freedom in determining when those come, and that gives a bit more breathing room to the stars to thank those who've influenced their careers and their performances. I think second, a lot of the pressure's off. I think that when the stars and others come to the Daytime Emmys and they know that the people who are watching are really the core fans who really are just there to support the community, and it's not the oversized event that some of the other broadcast award shows have become, it makes them a bit more relaxed. I think last year the Washington Post said it best when they described the Daytime Emmys as the most earnest award show on television, ironically not being on television, but because there was that sense of comfort, camaraderie, not rushing people off stage, and so on. So it really was a celebration of the community and not just filler between the promotional announcements.
Do you think this is a wave of the future for other awards shows? Do you think down the road sometime we will no longer see things like the Oscars and the nighttime Emmys and the Grammys on TV, but streaming, and thereby giving them the same opportunity to do what the daytime Emmys is doing and make it more of a feel and an idea that you're celebrating those who are winning the awards?
I think the trend of all television programming is to the streaming experience, that on-demand experience. Certainly, you've seen all the networks invest heavily in that space. You know, CBS with their all-access platform, Disney, the owner of ABC, now launching their own service. Big players like Netflix entering the fold. And as part of that, you're also seeing a collapsing of what had been very much of a pipeline of show producer to distributor to network to so on, to a much closer direct relationship between the original program creator and their audience. I think that is true of every type of programming, and that includes award shows, just as it has started to include sporting events and news coverage and every other genre of television.
Well, the 46th Annual Daytime Emmy Awards takes place on May the 5th and can be viewed live from the Pasadena Civic in Pasadena, California, on several outlets, including on EmmyOnline.tv, correct?
Yes, EmmyOnline.tv, at Daytime Emmys on Twitter or on our Facebook page.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Adam, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you, Peter.
Adam Sharp, the president and CEO of the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences. The 46th Annual Daytime Emmy Awards takes place on Sunday, May the 5th, from Pasadena, California. Go to emmyonline.tv to find out how you can see it. You can also go to facebook.com/theEmmys. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0506, and you'll find those links. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holden.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. If there's one warning label virtually everyone has seen, it would probably be the one found on pillows. There's a lot of confusion about those pillow tags. Can we remove them or not? However, if you actually make a pillow, they're not only confusing, they're expensive. Carrie Smith was expecting her first child when she developed a unique pillow that made her more comfortable. Other pregnant women loved it too, so she decided to sell them. Then she discovered that 15 states have special regulations just about pillow tags. She said that all the red tape was the toughest part of starting her business. Let's be fair, selling a pillow isn't easy in America. One of the winners in our wacky warning label contest a few years ago was found on a travel pillow made specifically for children. It's a great product, but it actually came with a warning saying, keep product away from children. With all of these regulations to think about, it's no wonder so many of us have a hard time sleeping at night. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And once again, on a semi-regular basis, because you know he's not on the show daily, here is Stuart Nauman.
Well, thank you, Peter. Yeah, well, there was a Stuart who did a daily show at one point.
Yes.
That was John Stewart.
Yes, yes, there was.
Yeah, and he hosted The Daily Show for many, many years.
Yes, he did.
Yes, but we're not going to talk about Jon Stewart, although he's written his share of books, and there's an excellent oral history about The Daily Show, but we're not talking about that book either. We're talking about, in this edition of Book Banter, about Trevor Noah, who is Jon Stewart's successor. And, you know, ever since the days of the court jester, the comedian has been regarded not only for their ability to make people laugh, but through their comedy can become a valued social critic, giving a unique, informed take on society and vital social issues of the day. Now, South African comedian Trevor Noah utilizes this role of the comedian as social critic quite extensively, as the host of Comedy Central's popular mock newscast The Daily Show, who, you know, he's Jon Stewart's successor, and as a touring stand-up comic. And he'll be back here in Montreal this summer to perform at the Bell Centre. as part of Just for Laughs. Now, thanks to Noah's stand-up comedy, we get a look at how he grew up in South Africa during the waning days of the government's oppressive apartheid policies, and that historic moment when Nelson Mandela was released from a 27-year prison sentence and ushered in democracy. But Noah was born to a white Swiss father and a black South African mother, which was a direct contravention of the country's Immorality Act of 1927, which made it illegal for Europeans and natives to have quote-unquote illicit carnal intercourse with each other and could lead to imprisonment for up to 5 years. This racial mixture had Noah fall through the cracks of the South African government's rather bizarre racial classification, where Chinese citizens were classified as colored and Japanese citizens were classified as white. Basically, he couldn't be classified neither as black, white, or colored. In his point of view, Noah was, according to the above-mentioned law, born a crime. And that's the phrase he used for the title of his million-copy best-selling memoir, which has recently been released in paperback. Now, Born a Crime is not the usual kind of memoir that comedians have been churning out for over the past 25 years, which are mainly a collection of humorous autobiographical stories that are strung together with samples of their stand-up comedy material. Noah offers a sobering, gritty, realistic look at what it was like to grow up in the volatile world that is South Africa when it went from one turbulent period in its history to another. Now, we find out what life was like growing up in the grinding poverty of the townships of Johannesburg, especially the powder keg that was Soweto, and which his detailed accounts can equal or surpass that of some of the best TV or newspaper foreign correspondents. And on the other hand, you get a firsthand account of Trevor Noah, the survivor. Especially, we get to know how he survived an abusive stepfather who somehow managed to always evade arrest and imprisonment for domestic violence because of the pro-male bias of the South African police, especially after he nearly fatally shot Noah's mother in the head. As well, Noah treats his readers to a number of stories that give a somewhat lighthearted look at to growing up under the harsh, racially charged atmosphere of contemporary South Africa. One of my favorite stories in the book was the time when he took the girl of his dreams to his high school's matric dance, which is the South African equivalent of the senior prom, but his date refused to leave the car and go inside to the dance for the single reason that she did not speak a word of English or any of the other native languages that Trevor was quite fluent in, because while they were dating, their conversations barely went beyond the cursory hello and goodbye. So basically, I think Born a Crime is probably one of the best memoirs to be written by a comedian since Lenny Bruce's How to Talk Dirty and Influence People and Steve Martin's Born Standing Up. We get a quasi-journalistic portrait of life under an oppressive, racially tense society in a turbulently changing South Africa. It gives his global audience a much more clear understanding of how apartheid tore apart this troubled country from someone who was thrust in the middle of all of that turmoil and survived it all with a great deal of humor, resourcefulness, and a strong will to continue.
You mentioned Lenny Bruce and Steve Martin as being someone that Trevor Noah's book can be aside in the library or on your bookshelf. That's pretty high praise for Trevor's book when you put him up against those two.
Oh, I know. And you know what? They each represent a different period of stand-up comedy, if you know what I mean. I mean, Lenny was like in the, represents the early days, the 50s and 60s. Steve Martin was 70s, 80s. And Trevor Noah is like the 2000s, 2010s. So you got three different eras, three different perspectives. But they both take in their books a serious look at their lives and how turbulent it was and how difficult it was and also how they got into stand-up comedy. So it's not just, you know, pasting up of their, you know, of their routines, but here's our story of why we got to this point.
Although, would you say the difference with Trevor's book as opposed to the first two is that his life or his story deals primarily with before he became successful, while the others include their success?
Yeah, I can agree with you on that. But because if you read Noah's book, you'll find out that stand-up comedy wasn't his first choice. He was actually a successful DJ and a traveling DJ who was in demand for parties, you know, across, you know, his native Johannesburg. So, I didn't know that. And so you get to hear, learn a different aspect of Trevor Noah's career that, you know, even though he liked to be funny and he was thought it was naturally funny, but stand-up comedy wasn't his first choice.
So this week's book is?
It's called Born a Crime by Trevor Noah. It's published by Anchor Canada in paperback, and it's $22, and soon to be a major motion picture, too.
Wow. And who, what other books would you consider in this genre? Perhaps maybe the two you already suggested?
Yeah, I strongly recommend the two books I did cite earlier, which was Lenny Bruce's How to Talk Dirty and Influence People, which was published around 1963, and Steve Martin's book Born Standing Up, which was published about 2007, 2008.
Excellent. And again, this week's book?
Born Standing Up by Trevor Noah. It's published by Anchor Canada in trade paperback, and it's $22.
And, you know, just for laughs, how can we find you?
Well, you won't find me on the stage of Plasti's Art cracking jokes or Club Soda, because I'd probably be booed off the stage very quickly. But they can't boo me off the pages of the Montreal Times. You can find me there in print every Saturday or online at www.mtltimes.ca.
Thank you very much, Stu.
And you're welcome, Peter. Ba-dum-bumps.
Stuart Nelman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about into the home stretch here on this edition of the Stuff File program. I do have one more Stuff File news story that I want to share with you right here, right now, before we get to our idiot of the day. So let's get to it. And you know, I cannot express how much I love this next story. Penny Ivy Thompson took matters into her own hands after she spotted an employee at her local garage using her truck to run errands when it was supposed to be getting serviced. The Mississippi woman claimed that not only did she spot her gray Dodge being driven around town instead of it supposedly in for repairs, but the driver was tailgating a smaller car. She said that while following her truck safely, she watched it turn into a Lowe's home improvement store. Then she made her move. Here's a quote that I love, which she had on her Facebook page. "I found my spare key out of my purse, and I stole my own Dodge from Lowe's parking lot, because you see, I'm a Home Depot kind of girl anyway." I love this woman. Oh, wow. You know, if it were me, I would have just taken my car back home and not called the local garage just to see how they would handle the situation and how long it would take them to say that the car was stolen, if at all. Yeah, I'd be curious to find out. Imagine going to a store, by the way, in a car that's not yours, and you're doing your own errands, and then you come out into the parking lot with whatever stuff you've had, and since he had a pickup truck and he was at a Home Depot outlet, I'm assuming he had some pretty hefty stuff to carry back. And then you come out and the vehicle's gone. What must be going through his mind at that moment? Yeah, I love it. Anyway, we are at the moment, boys and girls, the moment you've all been waiting for. It's time now for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
A would-be burglar got caught at an Oklahoma business after becoming trapped in a chimney for 9 hours. The Tulsa Fire Department said the man had cut the electricity lines of an air conditioner and attempted to shimmy down the chimney of the business when he became stuck. Eva Segala, who works at the Durango Auto Center, said her boss raised the alarm when he heard noises emanating from the chimney early in the morning. Well, he came in this morning and he heard a whining and crying noise and at first thought it was a pigeon because we get pigeons stuck in there all the time. And then he listened closer and heard help. That's when he left, closed the door and called the cops, she said. Firefighters said surveillance video showed the man try to criss-kringle his way down the chimney at around 12:30 a.m. Rescuers finally pulled him out at around 9:45 a.m. Fire officials had at one point considered dismantling the entire chimney, but eventually extracted the man via a pulley system. Now, why, oh why, would you think trying to enter a business in the wee hours of the morning via a chimney would be a great way to plan a burglary? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0506. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0506. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Guests of the Stuff File program stay at their own homes. Trust me, I'm the voice for this program. I know there's no budget for accommodations. I'm reading this on a futon.